as you can see, there are no relevant relationships. Good morning, and let me introduce myself. I'm Michael Root, and I'm from the Department of Philosophy at the University of Minnesota. And for a number of years, I've been writing about the use of race as a population-level variable to describe or explain variations in health risk, and also the use of race at the individual level to make decisions about how to test or treat an individual in a clinical setting. Today, however, I want to look at the use of race as a population level variable. Well, I'm sure as most of you know, there is a common research strategy employed in studying population level variations in the study of health risks, but also, interestingly enough, a whole variety of risks, including economic and other kinds of social risks. The strategy is simply to stratify a population into racial groups, to measure the difference between the groups in the rate that you're interested in. Today I'm going to be talking about rates of morbidity, specifically all cause morbidity, but also rates of morbidity and mortality, particularly all cause mortality, but some about disease-related mortality as well. And then the third step in the strategy is to report so-called black-white differences in rates. And I'm going to be focusing on black-white rather than the other differences between the other official OMB racial groups. The strategy that I just described leads to reports like or results like the following, as represented in this bar graph of differences, say, in age-adjusted mortality rates, all-cause mortality, say, between these years. And you might, since I'm focusing on black-white differences, note that at least according to this data and the way it's represented, there is a 30% greater rate amongst blacks than whites. But the question that's posed by this graph and all of these reports, of which you've seen many, is this. Are the reports of these differences accurate? Or to put it another way, are there any errors in the measurement of the race of members of the population? And of course, there are always going to be measurement errors. So the real question is how much error? And in particular, are those errors systematic, since it's systematic error that concerns statisticians most? Well, let me just go over something that you all know well about error measurement. First, that the bias or error in the measurement of a variable is the difference between the observed and true value. Bias or error is only possible if the variable in question has a true value from which the observed or apparent value can diverge. So if T is the true value of a variable, V, O, the observed value, and E, the error in the measurement of the variable, then you've got the following representation. But E, the error measure, has no value unless V has a true value. Now, I'm going to be focusing on black mortality rates. So the variable that I'm interested in is the race variable and the idea of the true value of a variable, say, whose values are one of the five official OMB races. Well, as you know from your own studies of mortality rates, the rate of black deaths would be equal to the number of black deaths within the population divided by the number of blacks. The race in the numerator is usually based on race on a death certificate. Errors in the numerator are measured by comparing the race of individuals on their death certificates and their self-reported race in a population survey. An individual's race on the survey is taken to be his true race in these measures of error, and his race on the certificate, his observed or apparent race. Now, were an individual's true or apparent race taken to be his race on the certificate, an overcount in the numerator would become an undercount in the denominator. Now, in order to stratify a population by race, as I sort of said when I laid out the research strategy, members of the population have to be assigned to a racial group. Members of the U.S. population are assigned to a racial group in one of four ways, either by self-reports, other reports of the person's race, the biological mother's race, or his race on a death certificate. Also, his race on a birth certificate in the case of infant mortality is often used, and that is often the mother's race. Often in the literature, self-reported race is taken to be the gold standard when assigning race to members of a population. For an increasing percentage of the population, these different ways of assigning race produce different results. If they all produced the same result in the majority of cases, there wouldn't be any issue about how best to assign race. But increasingly, they yield different results, especially for foreign-born Americans versus native-born Americans, and for younger native-born Americans. And there's a fair amount of literature indicating the lack of convergence with respect to these different ways of assigning race. However, when the reports differ, an individual's self-reported race is taken to be by epidemiologists to be his true race, and his other reported race, his apparent one. Now, the underlying assumption in studies of racial difference is that each member's race is fixed, and there is one best way to identify or assign a race to a member, and as I said, it's often taken to be the self-report in an interview and a survey by the member of the population. Now, a member's race, I suggest, however, should be allowed to vary with the trait or rate whose variation in the population is to be described or explained. So I'm challenging this assumption that a person's race is fixed and that the best way to identify it is by a self-report. That is, the way to determine the real or actual value of the race variable is always appeal to the self-report. A member's race can be black, on my suggestion, in relation to the rate of one disease or disease-related death, and white with respect to another. So let's go back to the concept of the true value of a racial variable. A member's true race should not be treated, again, I'll repeat, on my view, as fixed, but allowed to vary from one disease or disease-related death to another. The true value of the variable should be equated with self-reported rather than, say, other reported race, only if self-reported race describes or explains the differences within the population in the rate of a disease or disease-related death better than other reported race. So this is at least one way to conceptualize what I'm suggesting. If we let E be the variation between racial groups in the rate of a disease or disease-related death, and A the variation in rate within the racial groups, then this ratio here, and the larger the ratio, the better race describes or explains the variation in rate, so that one way, say, self-reports is better than another, say, other reports, only if then the ratio is greater if you use the one method of assigning race than you do another. So, for example, self-reports are a better way than other reports to assign race in a study of disease-related deaths only if the ratio between inter- and intra-group racial differences in the rates of deaths is greater if race is measured by self than other reports. In effect, what I'm suggesting is that race be treated as what's sometimes called an index variable. That is, race should be viewed as economists view variables like poverty and unemployment. In most of the economic literature now, you'll read that there is no best way to define poor, and a choice between definitions, say, for example, a choice between these two definitions, depends on interest. One definition it involves identifying poverty in terms of the income, the household's income in relationship to something called the poverty threshold, and another definition used more internationally is with respect to the U.S. median. Now, which of these definitions is best? Which captures the actual value, say, of the poverty variable? Well, there isn't any interest-independent answer. It depends upon what you're going to use the variable to describe or explain. So this definition might be better if the interest is homelessness, while this definition might be better, say, if the interest is suicide. So let's go back to measurement error. So let me tie this to the notion of measurement error and poverty rates. An estimate of the measurement error in a report of the U.S. poverty rate rests on a contrast then between true and apparent value of the poverty variable. The contrast is going to be different depending on how poverty is defined, say, in terms of the first definition or the second. And as a result, the estimate of error is going to be different as well. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 36 million people in the U.S. in 2006 were living in poverty. The number 36 million was an undercount given the first definition of poverty, but not the second. So let me start drawing this together, take-home message. Within epidemiology, race, I'm proposing, should be treated as a variable whose true value can vary from one disease or disease-related death to another, rather than a fixed characteristic of members of a population. That is, it should be treated more like poverty is treated in poverty research, or unemployment is treated, and less the way demographers treat age, say, and place of birth. There's no one way of assigning race to members of a population that should be treated as the gold standard. What should be the standard depends upon the interest. So let's take an example. If we ask what is Barack Obama's true race, or how might his race be assigned to him so in a study of risk variation, well, on my suggestion, his true race can be white with respect to the risk of death, say, due to sickle cell disease, and his true race can be black with respect to the risk of death, say, due to congestive heart failure. That is, if we ask what is Barack Obama's true race, the answer should be, why are you interested? That's what is your interest? And until you tell me that, I'm not sure how to identify his true race. Some conclusions. Reports of racial differences in the rates of morbidity or mortality within a population would be more accurate if epidemiologists did not assume that there is one best way to assign race to members, say self-reports, or that the true race of a member was always the same. Were the following rule assigning race adopted, that's the one here, For the following rule adopted, differences between blacks and whites in the risk of many diseases or disease-related deaths would be greater than, say, the NCHS statistics indicate. And the rule is this rule right here. Now, let me consider objections to my proposal, because, of course, each time I've given this proposal to various groups of people, I've gotten a number of objections. And here I'm going to imagine that this is my objector to my proposal. And so I imagine my objector first claiming that what I'm doing is promoting relativism. And I guess my answer to that is yes, but in many cases, indicating that certain things are relative to other things is, in fact, a virtue and not a vice. However, more seriously, in the terms of objections, so I think the more serious objections are the second objection and the third and the fourth objection. So let me quickly take these up. So the second objection is that in most cases, self-reported and other reported and mother's race, that is the different ways of assigning race, are the same, or the differences aren't significant enough to make things more complicated in the way I suggest, or my objector says at least they are in this state of Nebraska, Alaska. I'm a philosopher. I don't do empirical research, so I'm relying on the empirical research that my colleagues in epidemiology have done to sort of indicate, and demographers have done to indicate, that in fact these different ways of assigning race are coming apart increasingly, and that the numbers of people who would be identified as one race if we use one method and another race of another is increasing. So this is a significant concern if we use one race, say, like one way, say, self-reports continuously. Always relying on self-reports is easier. I have no answer to that. Yes, it is easier, but sometimes easier isn't better, but it's certainly easier. Some people regard it as more respectful. Yes, it can be, or that it reveals the social nature of race. But I believe that the proposal I'm suggesting, treating race as an index variable, indicates the sort of social nature of race, the interest-dependent nature of race, even more than always relying on self-reports as the basis. Now, these last two objections are more serious, that I can't compare racial differences in risk between diseases or disease-related deaths if I'm using different ways of assigning race, different actual values, the race variable, in different research projects. And secondly, that I can't study racial differences in all-cause mortality. And let me just finish by giving you just a brief response to these last objections. From the point of view of public policy, and I think one of the reasons one is interested in continuing to survey the population in terms of race and to stratify the population to discover differences in risk is for policy reasons, healthy 2010, to reduce the differences in the belief that if we identify the population by group and see what the inter versus intragroup variations are, that that's a way of forming and formulating and choosing between policies. And so from the point of view of public policy, what matters are the racial differences in the risk of specific disease or disease-related deaths. So that seems to me to matter most. With respect to public policy, statistics on rates of all-cause death seem to me to be less important than those on disease-related death. But again, the proposal I'm suggesting does make the continued use of race to stratify populations slightly more difficult a project than it currently is if one method of assigning race is used in all these different studies. Well, that's all I have to say. If you're interested in more details with respect to this way of thinking about the continued use of race at the population level, you can contact me, and I've got a number of published papers on this topic that work out these issues in a little bit more detail. And if you're interested in some of the sources on the basis of which some of these empirical claims I'm making are based. You can contact me, and I can provide you with those sources as well. Thank you. Yeah. Well, I was thinking more based on current practice, where it's mother's biological mother's race that's used when race is assigned based on parentage. Well, in the case of if you're considering as an alternative looking at both biological parents and making a decision about assigning race, that adds an additional level of complexity. But just focus for the moment on the current practice of looking at the individual's race of her or his biological mother. What I'm thinking about there is, say, with an obviously inherited disease like sickle cell disease, that would seem to be the most, if what you're interested in is variation between racial groups, that way of assigning racial groups and members to groups versus self-reported race would seem to be, I mean, just given a priori judgments, seem to be the way that's going to increase the inter-group difference relative to the intra-group difference. But
it's not specific to just the concept of allowing the size of disparity to determine your definitions of the groups.
I thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, there's a special problem here. I was on the plane. I was reading about a piece on alcohol epidemiology and the use of self-reports there to assign members of the population to various user groups, and the problem arising with respect to people who I self-identify themselves as lifetime abstainers, and the fact that these reports seem to be unreliable, at least inconsistent. But in the case of what is the actual value of that category, it's rather, I mean, it's clear. It's the actual amount of consumption, and we can identify that at least in principle by continuously checking blood levels. But in the case of race, see, it's not just an epistemological problem; it's a problem with the condition itself. And yet, given the sort of history of the concept of race, where it was thought as a genetic characteristic of individuals, it was thought more in the way in which we might think about this variable of a lifetime abstention. But I'm pointing out that, but to the extent that we recognize race as a social category, the issue then of what we take its real value to be, the person's actual race to be, that should be viewed as depending on why we're interested in assigning a person to that category.
It seems reasonable as long as you can find that there is no real value.
Yeah. There isn't, but to the extent that we talk about, I mean, because I was looking at the literature on error measurement in NCHS statistics, with respect to these, you know, mortality rates stratified by race, and they do talk about, you know, they do estimate the error, so they are treating something as the actual value, and so I don't want to deny you as statisticians the opportunity to do research on estimate error, measurement error, but what I want to tell you is that I want you to be aware of the assumption that you're making when you identify an actual value for this variable.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to have to move on. If you can have your question for the end of the session, and that'd be helpful. Thank you.
And there are places, plenty of seats available for those of you who are standing in the back. Please feel free to come on up and grab a chair. Well, this next presentation, I take a lot of pleasure in introducing Peter Emery's an old friend and colleague, and he's going to provide us a lot of stimulating thought today. The topic is sick or healthy, dead or alive, a century of progress in analyzing dichotomous disease data. And as you know, as statisticians, we are very interested in analytic methods. And so from the time that Pearson introduced the chi-square for analyzing dichotomous data back in the early 1900s, we have had several different methodologic advancements that have been extremely important to us as statisticians, also important to the public health arena because they have allowed us to better analyze increasingly complex issues as we've gone through the ages. So Peter's going to be talking to us a little bit about Mantel-Hensel statistics and logistic regression and generalized estimating equations, all these good types of methods that we as statisticians are rely on almost exclusively now. And he's going to tell us a little bit about their development and how they've contributed over the years. So, Peter, it's a real pleasure to introduce you today.
Thank you, David. I really appreciate that.